Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. This is a most special, most timely, most important conversation with one of the most influential figures in the entire country on matters involving refugee resettlement. It's a very topical issue, needless to say, because of what is happening in Europe, but also of what is happening here and likely to be doing so in a much more intense way in the near future. Her name is Anne Corcoran. She is a blogger at the indispensable website, Refugee Resettlement Watch. She is also the author of an important monograph featured in our Civilization Jihad Reader Series at the Center for Security Policy. It is available online, by the way, at securefreedom.org as a PDF, but you can also purchase it at Amazon. Or check out her video at YouTube on her terrific book, Refugee Resettlement and the Hijra to America. And I want to get into how this works mechanically, because I think most Americans don't have a clue and will be horrified when they discover the truth. But perhaps the best way to lead us into this conversation is to share with our listeners how you got into this business of monitoring and trying to hold accountable the various individuals and government agencies and the like that are in this refugee resettlement racket.
About 8 years ago, I live in Western Maryland in a rural county. I live on a farm. I homeschooled my kids. I was taking care of old horses on the farm. And in our county, it came to the attention of several of us that the Virginia Council of Churches had brought several hundred refugees and basically dropped them off. They weren't even taking very good care of them, frankly. It wasn't exactly a Christian effort, as far as I could tell. And when I started looking into it, I just wanted to understand how the government allowed this to happen. And I found out the government was paying the Virginia Council of Churches to do this. And one thing led to another, and I started researching the program, and someone suggested I write a blog to put all my research, which is what I've been doing for 8 years. And who would have guessed, just plugging away day after day for 8 years, this issue would now come to this position where it is, and I think it's one of the most important issues facing this country, maybe we've ever faced, and that is immigration, how many, and from where we're going to bring them from now into the future.
Well, just take that to the next step. You encountered people being brought into your community and started asking questions about how they got there, what kind of plan had been adopted by the local authorities and so on. And what did you find in your own sort of microcosmic experience?
Well, I found that it was a very secretive plan, that there was really no, and it was a plan from the Virginia Council of Churches and the federal government, and it sure didn't have much to do with our local elected officials or our citizens here. We had no say in it. The elected officials were barely notified. I mean, they were somewhat notified, but they didn't know what this was, didn't know what kind of questions to ask and so on and so forth. And what I ultimately found out is that there are 9 federal contractors contracted to the U.S. State Department, and they basically divvy up this refugee flow that's coming into the country, and they send them out to, right now, about 190 subcontractor offices around the country. And their job is to get them hooked up with their welfare, get the kids enrolled in school, get their medical care taken care of, and in 3 months they move on to the next batch, which usually involves relatives of the first batch. So, and this just goes on and on. They're paid by the head to do this work. There's no incentive to slow this flow.
To the contrary, they have an incentive to actually increase the flow. And I saw in the Wall Street Journal yesterday an interesting article that talked about basically the business of refugee resettlement and how now some hedge funds are among those getting into it on the grounds that they can make money even on a low margin business like providing refugee shelter and camps and so on. Provided there's, quote, volume, unquote, to it. And I thought of you immediately, because that seems to me to be what these voluntary assistance group volags are up to as well.
Oh, my gosh, I'm just in a state of shock. I had no idea it was going to that level now, too. But there is money involved, and there's big money involved in all sorts of ways.
Give us a sense of the magnitude of it.
Well, I can just tell you from the that the federal government each year for these 70,000 puts out over $1 billion just to bring in the 70,000. And that's for the cost of just bringing them in. It doesn't include literally the billions of dollars of welfare and education and health care and subsidized housing that these refugees are getting. And actually, there was a report the other day, and I had to laugh. It didn't surprise me that the largest percentage of welfare is going to Middle Eastern refugees, that they seem to be tapping in at a higher level than refugees from, say, Asia, the Burmese or the Bhutanese or whatever. But frankly, the Muslim refugees seem to be tapping into welfare at a larger level. So we don't even have a handle on the cost, the full cost of this.
Well, let's come back to that. But just staying with the cost for a moment, it would certainly seem to me that if you're spending over $100,000 a head, you'd be better off just paying them that amount and let them stay wherever they want to stay. They could buy themselves a nice place in a lot of places around the world, I suspect, without having to bring them here, to say nothing of, as you say, the knockoff costs that are incurred.
Let me jump in here real quick on this, because people are very concerned about this. Why aren't these refugees going to the Gulf states, the Gulf rich Gulf Arab states? Why is Saudi Arabia taking zero or any of the Gulf Arab states? That's one of the questions people are really shocked at when they learn that the Arabs don't want them in the Gulf Arab states.
You know, I was just advised by a colleague that some Saudi official had recently pronounced that they've actually taken in 2 million refugees. Do you have any evidence that that's the case?
I think that they're the workers. I think they're bringing in those the workers that they bring in. I don't think they're bringing refugees because there are many reports of Saudi Arabia just this past year packing up Somalis and putting them on planes that got into Saudi Arabia on their own and are being shipped back to Mogadishu. So no, they're the workers that they bring in. They're not meant to come there and live there permanently. That's one of the things people have to understand who are listening. We bring them here permanently. They are going to be U.S. citizens. In many states in the Middle East, Jordan, Lebanon, they're just temporary. When this is over, they will leave. They're not made citizens of those countries.
And in between the time that they become citizens and when they've arrived, there is, of course, an awful lot of aid and comfort provided to them. Just describe that briefly, if you would. What kinds of services flow to them from the moment they step on American soil?
Normal legal immigrants who get here cannot access welfare for a number of years. They're just prohibited from accessing welfare. This is quite different. The refugees come here and they literally have one of these contractors helping them, holding their hands, directing them to the right agencies to get them their food stamps, get them their subsidized housing, which is a problem in many cities where all the subsidized housing is being gobbled up by the refugees. And so American poor people are having difficulty getting subsidized housing in a lot of cities, Seattle being one that I've written about before. Their children, of course, will get a free education, and they will be getting health care. Any states that expanded Medicare are prime targets for more refugee resettlement going forward. And the list goes on. But as opposed to another immigrant who might come in who needs help, these people have someone holding their hand.
And as you say, that handholding can be of extended periods or relatively short periods, depending on whether those voluntary assistance groups have to turn to go get some more to come in. But you found in your own experience, as I understand it, Ann Corcoran, that a lot of this falls on the local communities and local authorities. It's not the federal government. It's not these voluntary groups, for example. And a number of them are associated with various religious denominations. It's not falling to those religious denominations either to pick up this tab, is it?
No, absolutely. And I always say that it was when the Refugee Act was first created. And let me just go back.
And we're gonna have to pause. Let me ask you just to hold that thought. When we come back, we'll go through a little bit of the history of this, because, again, my view of this is potentially such a fundamental threat to the culture of this country and our values that it does cry out for close examination by our elected representatives. And we'll learn more about why that's so from Ann Corcoran of Refugee Resettlement Watch right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.